Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Can I get a beef taco, please?
Oh, we don't do that here, sir. Can I offer you our vegan gluten-free broccoli tacos with cashew cheese?
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
How about some chicken fajitas? Can I do chicken fajita?
No chicken fajitas either, sir. How about some crispy kale lettuce wrap?
A what wrap?
Crispy kale wrapped in lettuce with a side of vegan coleslaw.
So it's a salad wrapped in a salad with a side of salad.
That doesn't work for me, man. I want the tacos. I like salad, but man, do I like tacos.
You're not into the rabbit food?
I like a salad, but
I like tacos.
Give me them tacos. Yeah, give me them tacos. How can people not like tacos? I don't understand it. We do it in Mexico all the time. All the time.
You don't feel like your head is burning or anything?
No.
You wanna go home and lay down?
No, I don't. No. No, I don't feel that way. I grew up with Mexican food. So for me, that's like, you know, it's what we ate. And I don't really remember eating too many salads growing up. I really don't. Now that I think about it. I don't know what that means, but I wasn't raised with salads.
I was just thinking kale. I had vegetables. Kale didn't exist when I was a kid. Not Kale Clark.
You're a little old. You're younger than him.
I am. Well, yeah, he but existed. Did kale? Kale was like a side.
Oh, that kale.
Kale was like a garnish. You didn't eat it, and now they make like chips and salad out of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife likes the kale. I'm not talking about the radio host, but I'll take a taco, please. And she'll have the salad. All right, what are we doing here? We're talking about tacos. It's very distracting. I'm getting hungry. We have work to do. 888. Thank you for that. By the way, I don't even know what that's from, but it's funny. Is there more of that stuff?
That's all I got. Yeah.
That's all you got.
That's all you're getting.
So if people wanted to hear it again, you're going to retweet that or what?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. On with the show.
All right. Next Taco Tuesday. Email. This actually just came in, and this is, I'm just going to keep it unanimous. There is no such word. Anonymous. And this is a listener who's writing in from California. And he says, recently you discussed in hints what married couples are permitted by way of intimate activities. By the way, parents, it's an important topic, but it's not for kids. So if you have kids in the room or in the car, turn the radio down for the next 4 or 5 minutes, maybe. And if you can, just shoo them into the other room where they're not going to listen. Let them play with the Play-Doh, and then you can listen. But you don't want little kids listening to this. I would say from about, I don't know, 16, 17 years of age and down, I wouldn't let the kids listen to this, okay? Fair warning, ready, steady, go. So the listener says, regarding the marital embrace, he heard on the program where I talked about in hints, and I think by that you mean in a kind of roundabout way, which is how I try to talk about these topics, regarding married couples and what's permitted in intimate settings. He says, my wife can no longer tolerate the marital embrace because it causes her pain. She's in her late 50s and as beautiful as the day I met her, he says. From what I took away from your earlier shows, we should now live as brother and sister. This is weighing on us. We do not want to sin. Did I hear you correctly? All right. This is a really good question. Not age appropriate for younger people, but here goes. You do not have to live as brother and sister, but there's a qualifier there. So if the marital embrace causes your wife pain and it's no longer possible for her to do this, and there I would put a little asterisk and say that's the kind of thing that very often can be treated medically or with certain let's just say remedies that can be prescribed, that can really help and maybe even eliminate that problem. So if that's where things are, then I would definitely inquire with a physician to find out what the alternatives are to see if that problem can be eliminated. And often it can be. So prescinding from that question, in the meantime, you and your wife are permitted, because you're married, to enjoy this good of marriage, which includes romantic, affectionate embraces, etc., that do not conclude with the marriage act. So all of those things that you might say are preparatory up to a point are permitted. Now, the reason I say up to a point is because anything that would lead to the conclusion of the act in a way that is not natural and open to the transmission of life, and here are the hints that I'm talking about that you mentioned, okay, so I think you know what I'm saying, right? If the act itself concludes in a way that is not natural, meaning that the, here go the hints, the complementarity between male and female physiology is not happening, then you can't do anything morally that would lead to that conclusion. You can, if you know that there's no danger of reaching that conclusion, you can indeed engage in physical, romantic expression of your love, so long as it doesn't go beyond the point where it would then happen in the way that I just described. I hope that's sufficiently ambiguous, but I think all the married people know exactly what I'm talking about. So you don't have to live as brother and sister in a strict sense, because you're still free to show each other physical affection, but you'll have to know yourselves, and you'll have to know your limits, because, and everybody's different. So if you know what your limits are, and you don't want to tempt, you know, you don't want to put yourself in a near occasion of sin either. So you have to be really careful in this regard. But brothers and sisters don't show signs of affection that you and your wife can rightfully show each other, as long as you don't cross that line. And that's where you have to be careful and attentive so that you can avoid doing so. I hope that that answers your question. I think it does. But I'd like to just, for a moment, come back to the first part about pain during this embrace. And I would say that very often is something that can be overcome, so that for many, many years into the future, the two of you can enjoy this important good of marriage. So I would encourage you, if you haven't already done so, to seek some medical advice on this. And I have a feeling you're going to be happily surprised that this problem is not going to be a permanent one. And I hope and pray that that's the case. Thanks for writing to me. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Brian now in Philadelphia. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Patrick. My question is about Byzantine Catholics and children who have received the sacraments at an age that are younger than they would receive them, specifically communion and the Eucharist in the Roman Catholic rite. It was understanding that Byzantine Catholics who are in this situation, if they come to the Roman rite, can still receive communion. But we have some friends recently who were told by our authorities in our archdiocese that while the sacraments that they received in the Byzantine rite are valid, it would not be appropriate for the children to kind of continue to receive. So I'm kind of confused about and I don't know what the reason why might be. I was wondering if you could maybe shed light on
I can explain it.
In the abstract. Obviously, you don't know the particulars of the case, but
I'm happy to explain it, Brian. Yeah, this is crystal clear for me. I understand where you're coming from. Okay, so a few preparatory remarks. First of all, in the Catholic Church, there are many rites. The main rite, of course, the predominant rite here in the United States, is the Latin rite of the Catholic Church. But there are other rites of the Catholic Church, so the Byzantine rite. And even within that rite, there are sub-rites, like the Ruthenian Byzantine rite. So it is true that in the Byzantine rite, that children are, when they are baptized as infants, they are also chrismated, which is the Eastern term for what we call confirmation, and communed. So an infant who is baptized in a Byzantine church will be baptized, chrismated, and communed all at once then and there. So a little tiny baby receiving Holy Communion, a little tiny baby being confirmed. Now, among the other things that I would be drawing upon to tell you this is my own personal experience, because although Nancy and I have always been and always will be Latin Rite Catholics, we have no interest in leaving the Latin Rite. We attended a Byzantine parish for 3 years, and we lived in that parish more or less as the Byzantine folk did. So we adopted many of their customs, and so my wife was pregnant at the beginning of our time in this parish. And so when she gave birth to this daughter of ours, the priest said, well, you know, if you want, you can have your other children chrismated. And when your daughter is baptized, chrismated, and communed, as she was at that, I take that back. It was actually a son who was born. And so that son was baptized, chrismated, and communed. And so we double-checked to make sure that we could do this, and we received a yes. So about five of our children, who at that point were not yet confirmed, they too were chrismated, and even the younger ones were communed. So that is all true, and they do that in the Byzantine Rite. Now, when you as a Latin Rite Catholic attend a Byzantine Rite church, you are asked, or it, what you should do is to observe their customs when you're there. So for example, when you're at Divine Liturgy, you wouldn't kneel during the consecration, because in the Byzantine Rite, they don't kneel. And so when you kneel as a Latin Rite Catholic, it introduces a note of discord and disharmony, and it's very easy for them to tell who the Latin Rite Catholics are, because they tend to kneel until they figure it out. So going the other direction, if you are a Byzantine Rite Catholic and you come to a Latin Rite church, your two-year-old son or daughter who was baptized, chrismated, and communed at 2 weeks of age should not receive Holy Communion in the Latin Rite of the church, because it is not the custom there to do that. And it would be distracting, and it would be even perhaps upsetting for people to see that, because they don't know about that generally. They're not familiar with that. And that would be very, it would be, just put it this way, it'd be very distracting and not helpful to do that. So in a nutshell, that's the answer. At least I think that's the answer to the question that you're asking me. So Byzantine Rite Catholics, when they come to a Latin Rite church, should not bring their children up to receive Holy Communion. And Catholics, when they're attending a Divine Liturgy at a Byzantine Rite church, among other things, would observe their customs, like not kneeling during the consecration. Does that get the answer that you're looking for?
Yeah, so that gets to it. I guess one just quick follow-up. So if I'm hearing you correctly, then the preference for refraining from participating in communion in the Roman Rite is basically a concern for the rest of the faithful about scandal or something else, or deviating from the custom.
Not scandal.
But I guess my question would be, like, what if the people in the parish, like, know that these were formerly Byzantine Rite Catholics, like, what's the risk there? Because then you're...
Well, the risk is that...
Equation, right?
Yeah, the risk
you're
is...
You're kind of, like, depriving the sacrament to the child who is otherwise capable of receiving it.
Yeah, the risk is that it's not the organic liturgical custom in the Latin Rite, and that has to be respected. And just as we have to respect the traditions and the customs in the Byzantine Rite and other rites, for that example, we don't seek to Latinize the Byzantine Rite, nor should we Byzantinize the Catholic or rather the Latin Rite. So that's an important distinction right there, and to show that proper respect. And the other thing is that in the Latin Rite, the theology, if you want to think of it along these lines, is that First Holy Communion should be something that the child is above the age of reason for, or at least at the age of reason, and should have sufficient preparation to receive Holy Communion. And Pope Pius X, he He actually lowered the age. It used to be before his time as Pope at, around the turn of the last century. It used to be customary for people not to receive their first Holy Communion until they were about 14, 15 years of age. And he didn't want that. He thought that's really depriving people of communion when they need the graces that come with it much earlier. So he lowered that age to about 7, give or take, depending upon the child. And he encouraged daily, well, frequent communion and daily communion for those who want to do that. So he was kind of bringing the Latin Rite more in line with the Eastern churches, but it wasn't all the way to infancy. So another little historical detail that might be of interest to you.
Well, thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah, I'm happy to do so. And
right,
I understand the question. Yeah, for sure. I understand the question because when you are, you know, at a wedding, for example, or you're attending some family function and some of the family is Byzantine Catholic or they're coming to a Latin Rite parish because you were a Latin Rite Catholic, these are things to be sensitive to. We don't have to obsess over them, but we should be sensitive to them and show respect. Let's go to, where are we going? Dan now in North New Jersey. Welcome to the program, sir.
Hello, Patrick. Good morning. I'm calling because, and I need to preface it. Good morning.
Good morning.
You there? Good morning.
Good morning.
I need to preface my question by telling you that I just caught the tail end of the conversation, so please forgive any ignorance I might have. That being said, I think we should engage the Jehovah's Witness. And I think we should engage anybody else about the church, about Christ, about their salvation. I do understand that some people are more capable than others at doing that, but you don't learn how to do it better or talk about your faith better if you never do it.
Okay. I mean, I don't know that we necessarily disagree, and that might be because you came in at the tail end of the conversation. I didn't tell that man that he shouldn't engage with Jehovah's Witnesses. What I told him was I advised him to do it with an accountability partner, somebody with him. And it's because, at least as far as this is concerned, Dan, over the years, and this is now over 35 years, up close and personal, I've seen countless Catholics who have left the church and become Jehovah's Witnesses for that very reason, because they were not sufficiently knowledgeable. And they certainly weren't prepared for how well-prepared Jehovah's Witnesses tend to be. And they wound up getting confused and swept away. And before they knew it, they were being baptized as Jehovah's Witnesses. So just from a purely anecdotal standpoint, I've seen it happen so often that that's why I think that it's good advice for somebody to take. If you're going to talk to Jehovah's Witnesses, okay, great, do that. But be sure that you have some accountability partner or partners with you so that you will not wind up as so many of these other people with good intentions have wound up. So I definitely stand by that advice. Now, I don't know that you necessarily disagree with that, but I certainly do agree that if you are sufficiently well-grounded in your faith, then it is a good thing to engage Jehovah's Witnesses. But then again, if you're not, I don't think you should engage with them because they're prepared in a way that will blow your mind. And when they knock on your door, they know what they're there to talk about. And the average Catholic can't find a Bible verse. That may not describe you, Dan, but I think it does describe quite a few Catholics out there. They don't know where to go in the Bible to demonstrate the Trinity, for example, or the divinity of Jesus. And I don't blame them. They've never been trained to do that. So I don't advocate that all Catholics should engage with Jehovah's Witnesses. Some, yes, but not all, because those people who are not prepared for it are really at risk of winding up being taken out of the church. What are your thoughts?
My thoughts are, most respectfully, I think I disagree with your position because we can all see it, that the church as a whole right now is being deceived by all kinds of worldviews and theologies. Different religions. And I think as Christians that if we don't start learning how to defend our faith and it's okay to fail. It's okay to fail. And then go learn more. I think we're in direct confrontation with what Jesus told us to do. But I do understand where you're coming from. But I think we need to step out in faith more and encourage each other more to learn the scriptures, to read the scriptures. Just like I'm certain on a topic, I would not be able to compete with you because you've been doing apologetics for X amount of years every single day. But if I don't engage with you, then I'm not going to learn and progress as a Christian myself.
I understand. I would invoke, of all people, Thomas Edison. And Thomas Edison said, enthusiasm is a great engine, but it needs knowledge for fuel. And I would apply that in this case. Enthusiasm is great. And for Catholics to have that enthusiasm and that desire to engage and evangelize and do apologetics, that's great. I mean, I've spent my whole professional life encouraging Catholics to do what you're talking about. So I'm with you on that. And I do support that. I want more Catholics, as many as possible, to be, as the Bible says, always prepared to give a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. But in that passage, though, you'll notice it says to be prepared, to be prepared. And if you're not prepared, bad things can happen. And here's something to think about, Dan, just again, anecdotally. The vast majority of Jehovah's Witnesses are ex-Catholics. They're not typically born and raised in Jehovah's Witness families. There are plenty of them too, but a huge percentage of the Jehovah's Witnesses who come to your door are ex-Catholics, and they wouldn't be Jehovah's Witnesses today if they A, had been prepared, which they weren't, but B, if they hadn't tried to engage with somebody who is far more, you know, at least in a superficial sense, far more knowledgeable and far more prepared than they were. So if you opened the door and Jehovah's Witnesses were there, I'm sure you would do just fine. They don't even come to my house anymore. I'm sure there's a big red X on whatever maps they have of the neighborhoods, and I'm a no-go zone for them. The last time I was visited by Jehovah's Witnesses was 25 years ago, and they never came back. And I wish they would, because I'd love to talk to them, but they won't come back to my house. I'm sure they wouldn't come back to your house. But the guy next door, that's a recipe for disaster. And I don't mean literally the guy next door, but, you know, my neighbors are probably not able to handle what Jehovah's Witnesses are doing unless they listen to this program. So maybe we can meet in the middle, Dan, because I do agree with you, and we should have more people who are able to do this, but because we don't, I worry about them, and I don't want to see them get siphoned off away from the true faith. That's all. That's my reason for giving that advice.
I hear you. And if I may, where do you think the church is failing? In that the faithful don't know the word.
I think we fail. I think we, the members of the church, fail. And it could be we're so busy with our iPhones or we're so busy with other things that we're just not paying attention. I think we need a great revival right now, Dan. A great, great reignition of Catholic faith and love and devotion that will spur. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. On to do these things. We could pray for them. Hey, Dan, thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation. I'll be right back. You know what? It's a great time to be Catholic because we have the message of peace and reconciliation on our lips, or we should anyway. So to the extent that people are antagonized and at each other's throats, it's the perfect scenario. That's our natural habitat as Christians, is to be there to try to help with the solution to that.
Thank you, Patrick, for you and everything your teams at Relevant Radio do to keep some positivity in the airwaves and on social media.
Bringing Christ to the world through the media.
Relevant Radio.
Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
This is good, Cyrus. This is real good. You know, I got an, I don't know if I'd technically call it a nasty gram. Well, actually, it kind of was a nasty gram. I think I have it right here. It relates to the music. I thought I had it.
Is it calling us racist again?
No, not this one. Like, would you start your radio program by screaming into the microphone? That's how it started.
Yeah.
Why do you blast your music so loud? I don't think it's loud. Maybe he just has sensitive ears. It's possible. But I think people kind of dig it, at least from the kind of emails that we get. People like it. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. A couple more emails. Five more came in during the break. This is from, where is she? Okay, yeah. Here she is. Janet. Listening in Fresno on our 100.7 FM station. I had to find you, but there you are. And her email is very succinct and very nice. She says, thank you. Your show is extremely informative and comforting for this Protestant. I listen on my phone, and I'm waiting for my quiz book. Thank you, and keep on keeping on. Blessings and praying for you. I am so grateful for that, Janet. Thank you. And I am all the more delighted that even though we don't necessarily share all the same views on issues like the Bible and such, the fact that you're open to listening and considering means a lot to me. So I am so happy to know that you're there, and I am grateful that you took time to write to me. Thank you for that.
She's going to love
you
that
too.
Quiz
keep
book.
On keeping on. Oh, my. Well, you know what? Let's pivot to that because, yeah, people are getting their quiz book ordered, and they're ordering them so fast that this gigantic print run will be exhausted in the not-too-distant future. Now, to give you a sense of perspective, so the book is called Inquisition. It's a Q&A book. It's quizzes, and it's fun, and a lot of different things going on in here. So whether you have maybe minimal knowledge or you think you're intermediate or you might even be an expert on things Catholic, I have a feeling this book is going to surprise you. It will reinforce the things you do know. It will maybe revise and update some things you know but are not exactly right. And then it will teach you a lot of things you never knew. And I had that same experience as I was researching doing the book. It was a lot of fun. But this print run was gigantic. And within the first, I think it was 10 days, over half of it was gone. So to say it a different way, tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of this book had been ordered and are now gone. So we have less than half left, and this is really it. I mean, I've been talking about this for less than 2 weeks now, and it's moving so quickly, and it's free. That's the main thing. I have to impress that upon you. The reason it's moving so quickly is because it's free. You go to relevantradio.com/quiz and you say, here's my name. Here's where I want you to send my free book. And that's it. You keep your credit card in your wallet or in your purse. What's in your wallet? My credit card. Why? Because I didn't have to use it. Why? Because the book is free. Oh, awesome. Where do I get my copy? Go to relevantradio.com/quiz. And it's really and truly free. You don't pay for anything. So Cyrus, I don't know. Maybe we should have an office pool, you know, and wager, friendly wagers, you know. How many more days will it take before this gigantic print run is entirely exhausted? And there may not be another print run, for all I know.
Yeah, this is basically...
As Kenny Loggins would say.
This is basically a collector's item. You're not going to get this anywhere else. But you can get it for free if you go to relevantradio.com/quiz. You're not going to find it at Barnes & Noble. It's free, which is why you're not going to find it at... It's why you're not going to find it at Barnes & Noble. Because there's no way for them to make a profit.
Because they don't sell free.
That's right. So this is it. And I don't know if there's going to be a second run, because the first run is big. But if there's only a first.
Oh, is it
big? If you want to get a first print, and we don't know if there'll be a second print.
First edition.
Of this collector's edition of Patrick Madrid's Inquisition, go to relevantradio.com/quiz. It's free.
M-O-O-N spells free. I memorized that. M-O-O-N spells free. and I want you to get your free copy. So please believe me. I'm really serious about this. If you wait a week, you're probably not going to be able to get the book because it's flying so fast. Now, little footnote. As Cyrus said, go to relevantradio.com/quiz and you can order your free copy. But if you want, within the window of time that we've got, and this is basically it, I think we have maybe a week left before these are all gone. My advice to you, if you want to make sure that your kids in college or whoever, anybody that's important to you that you'd like to make sure gets a copy of the book, the way to do that is take the link, relevantradio.com/quiz, and put it on your Facebook page, or I recommend that you text it. Just text the link and just say, you know, this is a free book by Relevant Radio while quantities last, and they're not going to last that much longer. If you want your free book, I ordered mine, get yours, click the link, and you can order your book. If you have loved ones in the military, they too, of course, can order the book using the APO, FPO, U.S. Postal System address. So it doesn't matter where they are in the world, they can get their free book. So be sure to let them know. Text them that link and just say, hey, you're in wherever, you're in Japan or you're in South Korea or wherever you happen to be, you can get this book free sent to you wherever you are using the APO, FPO system. So let's not leave them out. Also, and I'll leave it at this, if you're in Canada, there was some question about this at the beginning from some of our beloved listeners in Canada who said, well, what about us? Well, you can get the book too. But as I said, you have to act quickly because they are going very fast. I mean, really fast.
Super. Now that's what I call a taco.
888-914-9149. Thomas just sent me a note, young Thomas, that is. And he says, a caller called in just to say, I love your music, Patrick. Well, that's nice. Can you tell that we get into Taco Tuesday in a special way here on the Patrick Madrid Show? Thank you. A note came in a moment ago. This is from Paul listening in Chicago on our 950 AM station. Hello, Paul. He says, Patrick, many, many thanks to you and Cyrus and all of the Relevant Radio family for so much encouragement. Question, are you aware of a God door via the Top Gun movie? And I think he's talking about Maverick. That's appropriate for 8- and 9-year-olds in a parish religious education class that is prepping for the Sacrament of Reconciliation. This instructor, I believe referring to himself, has not watched the movie. From your taco club, Paolo. Sorry, I said Paul earlier. Paolo in Chicago. I am not. I saw the movie. And like a, you know, like a scoop of ice cream, it was, it tasted great. Kind of empty calories. It was a lot of fun. I enjoy watching the airplane zipping around and all of that. There is a scene that's not for 8- and 9-year-olds, and it has to do with the love interest. I mean, naturally, if Tom Cruise is in a movie, there's going to be a love interest, right? And even though there's nothing overtly explicit or problematic in an overt way, it's really clear what happened. I mean, it's really, really clear what happened. So much so that when he's sneaking out, okay, this is a spoiler alert. I have to tell you that. Spoiler alert. Turn it off for 30 seconds if you don't want to hear the spoiler alert.
La, 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 la.
Yeah. It's so clearly suggested as to what happened, something of, let's just say, an immoral nature between him and his love interest, that he has to sneak out of the house through a window. And this is not appropriate for an 8- and 9-year-old. Why? Because, among other reasons, when he comes down the side of the house from sneaking out of the bedroom window, who's standing there to meet him but the child of the woman whose house he just snuck out of? And so the child sees this, and the child is knowledgeable about what's going on. I thought that was a real, you know, an unnecessary part of the movie. So definitely don't take an 8- or 9-year-old to see it. Or if you do, and I don't really recommend that anyway, the kids would need to be older. But I'm afraid I have to disappoint you, Paolo. I just don't know of a God door. Now, Cyrus may be onto something that I didn't catch, because you're a quick study, Cyrus. Do you remember anything in that movie that might be a God door?
I think I might be the only person in the United States that has not watched Top Gun Maverick. I haven't seen it.
Oh, that's why you said la 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 la. I can't hear.
Yeah, because I don't want. Yeah, you know, I had my fingers in my ear because I didn't want to be spoiled. But I don't know. I don't know if I'll ever watch it.
Oh well, I mean, I'm not factory repping it by any stretch, but it is a fun movie.
People love it.
If you like the idea of
people around the office here, love it. I mean, they've seen it. I know a few people that have seen it multiple times. So it's.
I can tell you in a nutshell what it's about. Here it is in a nutshell. There's this impossible target that it's impossible to hit it. There's no way you can physically do it. You just can't get to it. You can't hit it. And Tom Cruise does the impossible. He hits it. That's the movie. I just saved you 2 hours.
It sounds like Star Wars.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
The first
it's not
one.
The Death Star.
Oh, okay.
So I'm afraid I don't have a suggestion. Cyrus obviously doesn't have a suggestion either. So sorry about that.
I have a suggestion. Watch Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Watch Star Wars. I've seen it. That's the suggestion.
I saw it when it came out the summer of 1977.
I'm jealous.
I saw it. Yeah. Hey, another email here. This is from Aussie listening in Los Angeles, and it's about confronting Jehovah's Witnesses. And I don't know if Aussie is a man or a woman. I think it's a woman. It says, we were cradle Catholics. My sister became a Jehovah's Witness in the mid-1970s and tried to convert me, but I knew that I was in the true church, although I had fallen away at the time, but I'm back now. Well, that's good. And I guess you're kind of making the point that I was making earlier, Aussie, and that is that even cradle Catholics who were raised in the faith are, generally speaking, not prepared for Jehovah's Witnesses. If you are prepared, great. Otherwise, I would be really cautious. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Bernice in Graham, Washington. Hi, Bernice.
Well, hello. Pardon me. Going back to a previous caller who stated, read the Bible, it's funny he said that because this week, Father Dominic at our church said, hey, put down Facebook, put down the iPad, and why don't you spend an hour reading the Bible? So I agree with him. But the other thing is, if you pay attention at church, we read a lot of Bible every Sunday. So you people should be paying attention. So that's my other section. Regarding Jehovah's Witnesses, my question is, how I approach people when they ask me, oh, you're Catholic? Well, you know, they're whatever religion. I have not been approached by a Jehovah's Witness, but my question to you is it okay for me to ask them how long has your church been around? Is my usual question.
Sure.
And then I ask, oh, yeah. Okay. And then my next question is, well, where did you receive your Bible? And they kind of look at me, well, this isn't. And then my next question is, well, who saved it in its original format? How did you come by it? And then my next question, when they still don't know the answer to that, I said, well, I'm just curious because I wanted to know, by what authority did your church change the original verbiage? I said, because my church has been around for 2,000 years, and we're the ones that kept all the original documents. So we have quite a few of them, and our authority is through Christ. So I'm just curious how you receive your authority. That's usually my, and then people just turn away. They don't even want to talk to me about religion.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so I
understand exactly
okay
what you mean. Those are all good talking points. Oh, yeah, it's okay, certainly. Nothing inappropriate about that. We obviously want to say it in a way, and I'm sure you did, that doesn't come across as sneering or triumphalistic or disrespectful, but you are saying the truth, and these are good thought starter questions. You know, how did you get your Bible? How did those books that are in your New Testament, how did they get there? Bernice, I remember back in, what was it, 1993, when Pope John Paul II came to Denver for World Youth Day. And I was working at Catholic Answers at the time. And for that occasion, by the way, my task was to write that little booklet. You may have seen it, called Pillar of Fire, Pillar of Truth. And we distributed those by the gazillions. You've seen that?
Oh, okay. My gosh. My mom gave me one.
So hearkening back to that, and that was the first time we distributed them. So I was given the task of preparing the text of it. And of course, you know, the team jointly worked on finalizing it. But the main thing is that mm-hmm. I produced the little booklet so that at World Youth Day, we could distribute it to all the people who were going to be, all the young people especially, who were going to be preyed upon by other groups who were going to try to tell these Catholics why they should leave the church, etc. So the reason I mention that is because during the World Youth Day proceedings in Denver, Carl Keating and I were challenged to do a debate, and actually I think we were challenged to do a couple debates, but the one that was accepted was at a Baptist church, and it was, and you'll understand why I'm telling you this story in a moment. It was at a Baptist church in, I think it was Littleton, it was a suburb, and so Carl and I debated two Baptist ministers in a Baptist church in front of an audience, as I recall, like 600-700 people. It was jammed. And I think a lot of them were Baptists. There were a lot of Catholics there too, but there were a lot of Baptists who were there. They're probably their church members and such. And there was one moment that was just a glittering memory in my mind. There's one moment when it was a cross-examination time, and I asked the two Baptist debaters, how do you know which books belong in your New Testament? For example, how do you know that the Gospel of Matthew, which is an anonymous document, doesn't tell you who wrote it, how do you know that that belongs in the New Testament? And this is what happened. So the minister, he opens his, you know, like to make it a dramatic moment, he opened his Bible and showed the audience, and he pointed to the table of contents, and he says, Mr. Madrid, this is how I know, because it says so right here in the table of contents in the Bible. And it was like he had handed me a gift. So I said, well, sir, I'm not sure if you realize this, but that table of contents was not put there by God. That was put there by the publishing company. There is no table of contents in the New Testament. It doesn't tell you which book. And you're on to what I'm saying, right? It doesn't tell you which books belong in the Bible. And it was a moment, there was a moment of silence, like everybody like, that's so obvious. How can we never thought about that? And I've never forgotten it. Hey, great talking to you, Bernice. Thank you. And keep on keeping on, as somebody told me earlier today. I'll be right back. Let me ask you, can the Catholic Church have a future if we Catholics don't understand our past? Experience history the way it should be taught in a free online class from Christendom College. Just go to principlesclasses.com.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
That's right, Cyrus. I love watching. You're like a child on Christmas morning on Taco Tuesdays. Make that whistle again for me. I like it when you do that. Come on. Yeah. You're good at that, man. You've been practicing.
When you said you're like a child, in front of the mirror
from time to time.
When you said you're like a child,
I thought you were just going to stop.
You're like a child. No. All right, next call.
What did Jesus say? He said, "Unless you become as a little child, you're not going to go to heaven."
I'm doing my best.
So you're halfway there, Cyrus.
Thanks, buddy.
888-914-9149. Let's see. First of all, I have an email here. It comes in from Anonymous. About nicotine use. As Artie Johnson used to say, very interesting. And all the young people say, Artie who? Patrick, what are your thoughts on the gravity of sin in regards to persistent nicotine use due to addiction to it? Chewing tobacco, vaporizing, I think that means vaping, right? Patches, gum, or cigarette use. Are there different gravities to each type? I understand we ought to free ourselves from all earthly attachments out of love for our Lord, but I'm curious if it is sinful, and if so, how much? Thank you for your thoughts. Great question, Anonymous. And I want to say that, first of all, I am not a smoker. I've never been a smoker. There was a time when I enjoyed the cigar or two here or there, but not you know, not a lot, but I never developed the habit for nicotine. And I look back on it, I'm glad I never did. And everyone around me, it seemed like they smoked. And I don't know why. I guess I'm a boring guy and I never picked it up. So long story short, I can't speak from experience in terms of what it must be like for people who have a nicotine addiction and have to overcome it. I have a lot of admiration for people who have done that. My mom and dad, well, my dad smoked when he was younger. Of course, he was in the military, and back in the 50s, that was the thing to do. And I even remember when my dad was kind of urging my mom to take up smoking. She didn't really want to, but because it was the social convention of the day back in the 60s, there was a short time when she smoked cigarettes too. And I think that, as I recall, maybe that lasted a matter of a few years before she said, this is, no, I'm not going to smoke cigarettes. But I've known people who have an addiction and they've conquered it. And different things work for different people. Some go cold turkey. Some use step down like the Nicorette gum or the patch, things like that. So my answer to your question is, first of all, encouragement for those who would like to be free from this addiction, because it really is terribly addicting. And I would like to begin with that note of hope and encouragement that if you are thinking along these lines and if this applies to you personally, then I would encourage you to do everything you can to try to be free from it. I think that's meritorious in God's eyes. Now, is it a sin? Well, the fifth commandment says, thou shalt not kill. And the Catholic Church says that this commandment extends to not just physical death, actually killing somebody, but it extends in various directions to sins that would be under this umbrella. And that would be, you can kill somebody's reputation by gossip or slander, for example. You can kill somebody's career. You can kill somebody's marriage. You can do all kinds of killing of things that are not the body, but still can induce death in certain ways that would fall under this category of thou shalt not kill. And one of those things is harming your body, intentionally harming your body, doing something that you know is going to be detrimental to your bodily health. Not that it's necessarily going to kill you, but in the case of smoking or other forms of tobacco use, it very well can kill you and has killed countless people. So I hold the view, and I think this is on good grounds, understanding the church's overall approach to thou shalt not kill, but also to the ways in which that can be done short of killing the body. I do believe that it is sinful, especially now with all the medical knowledge that we have. People know that cancer is very commonly associated with nicotine and smoking and chewing and all that stuff. I do believe, this is me speaking, I can't claim the church says this, but I think that's the spirit of what the church does say, is that, yes, it would be sinful if you pick up smoking now or you start chewing tobacco now. And I have known some people close to me, dear to me, people I love, I'll leave it at that, who have taken up chewing tobacco. And I've said, I love you. Don't do this. It's bad for your health. It's sinful. And with varying degrees of success. And because you're running the risk of harming your body or killing yourself, the risk is real. Now, what about somebody, maybe more to the point of your note here, what about somebody who's already addicted to it? Well, the addiction, of course, I think mitigates in the here and now. So like this cigarette you're lighting up right now is different for you if you're addicted than it is if you're 20 years old and you're lighting up for the first time because it's the cool thing to do and everybody else is doing it and you know it's going to hurt your body, but you do it anyway. I think that the gravity of the sin for somebody who has that clarity of information and is just going to start doing it and is not addicted and doesn't feel compelled to do it but is doing it anyway, I think that would be a greater sin or a more weighty sin in the here and now than it would be for somebody who's smoked for 30 years and it's just a habit and they are addicted to it and they light up. In that moment, here and now, I don't think that that in itself is a serious sin per se. But the roots of that go back to how did you get addicted in the first place? So whether it's smoking or the solitary sin that is usually found when people look at pornography, that can be an inveterate habit that for some people, it can maybe even their whole lives or for much of their lives, they're addicted to that particular sin. And some would say, well, then it's not really sinful for them because they can't control themselves. They can't control the smoking. They can't control whatever because it's so habituated to them. They can't overcome that. Well, I don't think that exonerates somebody from actually committing a sin. And so habitual sin is one of those terrible consequences of starting the sin in the first place, because then you become enslaved to it. So I'm not here to grind on you. I'm not here to judge you. It's not my place to judge anybody, for that matter, but to offer some food for thought. If you find yourself addicted to tobacco, thankfully, we live in an era when there are many remedies for that. There are many ways in which you can find relief and you can become free from that addiction. And I would encourage anybody to do so, as I would for any other addiction. But I mean, that's a really, really strong one. So if you are asking the question, it suggests to me that maybe your conscience might be bothering you a little bit. And that's a good thing because it means your conscience is working properly. So my advice would be when you go to confession, just bring it up. Lord, I feel guilty because I have allowed myself to get into this addiction of smoking cigarettes. Now, the priest himself might be a smoker, so he may say that's not a sin. You know, there are different perspectives on this topic. I'm sharing mine with you because you asked for my personal view on this. This is the way I approach it. And maybe I would think a little differently if I were a smoker or if I had smoked at one time. But that's my honest answer to your honest question. I hope it's helpful. I really do. It's better to be free than enslaved, don't you think? Well, we have another hour to go, and it's going to go quickly, just like those free books are going quickly. I'll be right back with that right after this. Woo!